Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Africa Straight Talk. We are Africa's unapologetic podcast that brings you discussions of matters of the African continent in a very unique and straightforward way. My name is Manuel Nado. We thank you for your unwavering support of our podcast. My co-host today is my colleague and producer and editor of our show, Kaboshi Mbukwa. With us is our fellow podcaster, Kwesi Wilson, host of Telling Tall Stories. Hello, hey. Kaboshi and Kwesi. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what's going on in the Bay Area where we live?
The Bay Area, I think we actually now have to get canoes and water rafts mm-hmm. to move around because of the rain.
Oh, yes.
It's been raining nonstop.
Well, that's where
we need
live.
Noah's Ark.
Where I live.
Noah's Ark. Who are you going to put in this ark?
You know what's funny about the Noah's Ark story?
Yes.
Let me tell you my thing about the Noah's Ark story. Every breed of animal was sent into that ark, right?
Yeah.
And it was almost as if the lions decided, we're going to fast for 40 days and 40 nights.
No way.
<Wow. laughs>
Because if I'm the lion in the ark,
yeah,
this is the best time of my life.
Yes.
But you see, the animals in the ark are not roaming around. They are in their own little cages-ish.
How do you know the cages?
How do you know they were roaming around?
They were in cages. All kind of cages.
I don't think Noah would like to put them in the cages. That's no good because he was living among them. They were not.
No, the human beings had their own quarters, and then the animals had their own space. So I mean, the lions were.
Where did you get that description from?
How do we know there were lions? Where did you get the description that they were just roaming around?
It said that every animal, they got a male and female of every animal.
Exactly.
Male and female of every animal. So there must have been lions because they're animals.
I don't disagree with that.
All these cats were in there.
Are you trying to tell me all these cats were in
there? To me.
I'm sorry.
Three animals are coming out of the kingdom.
I think you got hyenas
coming out.
But this is the question. How do we know that there were lions living in, you know, wherever Noah was and hyenas? And
yeah, and, you know. There were lions.
There's that thing. Were there dinosaurs too?
No, there were no dinosaurs.
I mean, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. Let's put it that way. Anyway.
So you say that Noah took each of the animal with their female counterpart, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
One of each, yeah.
So that they can procreate, yeah? That's why today we have
complete the world when the destruction was over, yeah.
Exactly. So that is the point of the anti-LGBTQ people who are against that because they say no two men can make a baby. Yeah.
We're gonna come to that later. That's true. Yeah.
Anyway, enough of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And some people who don't believe in Christianity or in the Bible or the church, whatever.
Who are those people?
I'm talking about you. Kwesi,
how preposterous it is.
Stop distracting me from what I want to say. Oh my God. Why are you in my face today? Like, what's the problem? Did you dream about me?
Talk to me.
It's on the other side. It's on the other side of the bridge or whatever.
What did I do to you? Like, really? Honestly, all I want is some Ghanaian food. That's all I want.
All our interactions. So
all I want is some Ghanaian food. That's it. Like nothing more. And then I'll be the happiest woman on earth. But
no problem. I got you.
thank you.
I mean, speaking of rain, you know, we were talking about the rain earlier before Noah's Ark came. Sorry, Kevin. But, you know, it's been raining a lot in the Bay Area. And I heard somebody today that said they had enough of the water. They had enough of the rain. They can't take it anymore. They're all upset about it.
You can tell them to move to Canada.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And when the summer comes, they will say, there's a drought.
Yeah, we need to conserve water. But when there's rain, they're like, we don't want. I mean, human beings are just very unsatisfied people. But in the Bay Area, we had elections, and I worked as a polling judge. Mm. They call them judges. They don't call them clerks anymore. In Oakland, so I was one of the people who were checking in voters and making sure that they received the correct ballot. And they were the right people to receive that ballot and watching them vote. So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting process, by the way. Over here, there were some polling stations that were open for 11 days. And our polling station was only open for 4 days. So we were there from Saturday. And there wasn't a lot of foot traffic, right? There weren't a lot of people coming. In fact, there was nobody that came in on Saturday. Very few people came in to physically vote on Sunday, but people were depositing their mail-in ballots.
They're really focusing on
mailing in,
and everyone gets their mail-in ballots.
Yeah.
For one, lost my ballot.
Question, how do you lose it?
I threw it out by accident.
Oh.
I threw it out even with, had a bag. I even had about some bills, dollar bills in them with everything that I accidentally threw it all into the garbage.
What?
Yes.
I see you're rich, man.
$40.
How did you do that?
Money? US dollars?
US dollars. And
the greenback.
Maybe about $40.
Uh-huh.
And I put it, I just put it in a bag and I put it down. I was going to sort through the mess. And then on a different day, I looked at it. I said, oh, this is trash. And I put it in the trash bin.
You know what? Because you're rich.
Everything's gone. Yeah. No, I'm not rich. $40 is not.
What do you mean?
I'm still mad, but I think somebody will need that money more than I do.
No, so, the person will not even. Nobody will find it if you put it in the garbage.
Yeah, well,
they will smash it and
money. I'm hoping that
some dumpster diver, will lock up and then go and vote for me and then get $40 payment for that too as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But I forgot, I didn't get to vote. So I went to the polling station and there was nobody there. There was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I could go in there, walk in and vote. They weren't even open for that at the city hall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you could vote at the city hall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But listen, this is the thing. There, you have to go online and look at where you can actually physically, not your, you can go, you can vote anywhere. Like, what's your county?
Yeah.
If your county is, for example, Alameda County.
Yeah.
You can go to any polling station in Alameda County and vote there. And you will get a ballot.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah,
I didn't get to vote. I'll vote in November.
We even had people who are coming from, who came from Sacramento, who wanted to vote. But the thing is, they will still vote. But what they will get a general ballot that will just have
the state. Provisional one.
Yeah, they will vote. Yeah, they'll vote provisional. But they will get a ballot that will just have whatever is, you know, whatever measures are statewide, but not county. You know, whatever county you're from,
you won't get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had someone from Monterey County. This person lived in Salinas and they were in the Bay Area. So they just voted like general.
Mm.
So you can still vote. You absolutely
now
can.
I know.
Yeah, now, no, next time, you know, ask me.
I went to drop my my ballot at the city here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a mailbox in front of the city hall.
Did you get a text message to say that your ballot has been received or has been counted and all that?
No, not yet. Okay. I got a text message.
Yeah. Like when the ballots are being mailed, they'll be like, hi, your ballot is being mailed to you. You'll receive it in a couple of days. And then when you drop it off and they either open it or it goes through that process, they'll send you a message and be like, we received your ballot, blah, 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 and all that. Yeah. So it's very elaborate. I know in Africa that, I don't know if that will ever happen. Fingers crossed it might one day.
So speaking of African elections and what Nadu was saying, I wanted to add that, you know, in Africa, the elections are personal. And elections, politics are a means to an end. Actually, that's somebody's job. You know, that's getting access to the state coffers, contracts, what have you. Yeah. And so they take it personal. That's why they don't even want to relinquish power. Because relinquishing power is giving up your livelihood, right? Because people are dependent on government stuff, even though it's not for them, right? That's where the violence comes in.
Speaking of violence and our beloved continent, there's the ICC is ruling for reparation for victim of the Lord's Resistance Army. So first of all, let's tell our listening audience, I mean, who are the Lord's Resistance Army?
So the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA,
they come from the Lord, right?
They come from the Lord. It's a Christian extremist group that operates in northern Uganda. But they're also in South Sudan, Central African Republic, DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, right? So that's who they are. They're like a rebel group. And they've been there for quite a while, since 1986 is when, you know, it came up. And they have a leader called Kony, and Kony, did so many terrible things, has child soldiers. He used to go raid, places and, you know, take their children and now train them to be, you know, in the army. And they grow up with that, you know, like they're actually child soldiers. Let me just put it that way.
Child soldiers.
And they've been fighting with Museveni, because, well, they want to take over clearly. So the ICC, So one of their, rebels was captured and taken to The Hague, right? The International Criminals Court. And the, and ICC ruled that, you know, rule that there should be reparations paid to the victims of the Lord's Resistance Army. And the money that they're asking for, I mean, the court says that the LRA should pay $56 million, which I, no, I don't even know if that will ever happen.
It has never happened.
Yeah, yeah, so the militia commander is called Dominic Ongwen. And Dominic Ongwen is a child soldier. So he was captured and he was trained to be a soldier. And he was 9 years old when he was captured. My thing is this. Fine. You know, what this rebel group has done over the years is terrible. I agree. Kony himself has never been found. No one knows where he is or even if he's alive. Right? So why is this Dominic Ongwen man being asked to compensate for victims? Because he himself is a victim, isn't he? If he was a child soldier, right? And the judge, so his defense lawyer was like, this guy is, he doesn't know anything else. He doesn't know anything better. This is what he grew up with. You know, and the judge is like, no, he was an adult when he decided to go do, what it is that he did. And yes, that's the black and white of the matter, right? But there's a gray area. There's post-traumatic stress involved in this. There's some mental health. He doesn't know anything else. So I think it's just wrong, own opinion, to make this man pay for what it is that he did, right? And ask him to pay $56 million to the victims without looking at what happened to him in the past and how it is that he came to be the way he is. That's just my opinion.
I think the ICC is trying to save face because I don't even think, I don't even know, or probably they are not even looking actively for this guy, Kony.
They probably aren't,
the main guy. They probably are not because it's in Africa. When crime is committed there, they let it go.
Yeah.
See, that the same thing is happening in, with the M23 over there in the Congo as well. It's a rebel army, and they're going to little town or villages and villages and killing people and raping and all this. And where the ICC, do they have intelligence, or do they have people to be searching those people? No, they don't. They just want to save face.
With the Congo, and even ICC, that's when we talk about the Lost Resistance Army, I sometimes wonder if the funding of that army and everything else could be these religious organizations from here that have been trying to sort of puppeteer things going on in Africa. You know, these religious fanatics. I don't know the details and whether there's a money connection there. But the other thing that I was going to say is with the Congo is, you know, these extractive companies that are taking minerals out of the Congo and then arming rebels to protect these minerals or to give them access to those minerals are part of what's going on in the Congo.
It could be. It could be.
Western forces are behind it, but, you know, they're not having the funding, the money, because they're getting the access to the resources. Congo has, what, copper, cobalt, you name it. And they're extracting it from there, that region. And what some people are saying is Kagame is also, what you call it, complicit in that whole thing, given that, you know, there's a conflict between Rwanda and the Congo around their border. And that's that's the area that's also affected. And so it's an interesting thing, but it's just interesting how what is happening, the conflict. We hear a lot about Gaza and the destitute nature of the Congolese people. It's not part of the, you know, the media coverage.
Yeah.
You know, people know there's something going on. Is it an African fatigue that people have? People are just tired of hearing about African stories or African lives don't matter. You know, I'm not saying what's happening in Gaza shouldn't get coverage, but we should be able to cover it all.
Well, that was, you say, I mean, you were right, because that was the protest of the Congolese players at the African Cup of Nations.
Remember
that?
Yes, they wanted to bring attention to that.
Yeah, it's funny you mention fatigue, because all the news we hear of Africa is war, poverty, civil strife, you know, just, and it gets, it is exhausting.
Well, you know, what is this thing, and I get about it, the Israeli-Palestinian thing, and you go everywhere, it's, I mean, this has been going on for 75 years, right? Now the narrative is now beginning to change, but you go anywhere now, you see Free Palestine, Free Palestine. Yeah. People are more aware.
All over.
And they're aware of it because it's being covered. So if there was any sort of fatigue, it shouldn't be any different from the Palestinian conflict, which has been going on for just as long as we've had our independence.
What is the coverage like in Africa? Are they... is the coverage about Africa, or is it about Gaza in Africa?
Let me put it this way. There is no such thing as news coverage in Africa. African news stations do not have the, the resources to send reporters all over to go cover stuff. So they, every local newspaper or whatever, radio station, they look up the internet, and then they find stories, and that's, they call stories from the web, right? Yeah. So the person who covers Africa is usually Western media outlets like BBC Africa or Voice of America, VOA, and all these foreign international outlets that are covering what's happening in Africa. For, I remember growing up as a kid, I was a news junkie. And to really find out what's happening in Africa, my dad and I would listen to BBC Africa on the radio, you know, and we don't cover our story. We don't have the resources you know, to build our own media house, like sort of like the Al Jazeera of Africa. Mm-hmm. People, we don't even think of that.
But right now, though, because of the proliferation of the internet, there is an African radio and TV and what are they? They're in Cameroon. It's called Afrique Media. Have you checked that out? It's called
Afrique Media. I think I have the app.
Yeah, they're in Cameroon. And they're very progressive. They are really like a Pan-African station. Mm-hmm. And they rely on their listeners from all around the continent. Even sometimes the clips, the videos they put on air, it's all sent by their listeners in different places. And sometimes listeners call in.
Is it in English?
It's in French.
Okay.
But I think they do have a segment in English as well, because, you know, Cameroon is a bilingual. They speak French and English. Mm-hmm. But check it out. It's Afrique Media. Afrique Media.
Afrique Media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Afrique, like they say it in French. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Afrique with a Q-U-E, Media. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Check it out. They don't have, they don't have... you know, generally they send all over the place, but they get all the information for the people who are living the story.
Well, more like a citizen journalism.
Yeah, it's citizen journalism. That's what I was thinking.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's in French. I don't know how to do this. I might need Nado here. Like,
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that being
everything.
French?
Everything. We are trying to get rid of the colonialists.
but check it out, because I think they have a segment in English.
What is souviens?
That I do not know.
No, the word souviens means what? And S-U-I-V-A-N-T. Souviens.
Souviens.
What is it? Souviens? No Ghana jollof for you.
Souviens, it means next.
Next. Oh, okay. Okay. See, I'm learning something.
So we're talking about the Congo crisis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. What is going on? Kagame is really involved in this rebel group that are destabilizing the Congo. Mm-hmm. They say that Kagame is doing the work for the United States that want to have a foothold.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he's trying to make a deal here, because he's probably trying to get something out of it. That's the whole thing about this. You know, you just don't walk in blindly, right? You're trying to get some benefit out of something, out of a deal that you're going to make. So he probably is involved in it somehow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
I haven't seen anything to that effect on any credible outlet. It's just more from the grapevine that I keep hearing these stories bringing in Kagame. So I haven't really ascertained the credibility of that information. But I know Rwanda and Congo are at war. Not war, all-out war, but they have a conflict at the border.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a border crisis. Now, getting into the weeds of it and really, you know, the underbelly of the conflict is something that I'm not exactly sure the level of involvement Kagame has in it, right?
Yeah.
But I know it has to do with extracting resources. This has been going on for a long time in the Congo, where you have all these mercenaries that go in there to go protect foreign companies that are doing extractive, you know, jobs over there. So say they come to your country and they're digging out gold, and the rebels have given them the land to dig out the gold. The mercenaries come in and then they protect, and then they arm or train the locals to help be the forces that help protect the company, take out, you know, protect the companies, take out whatever it is they're taking out from there.
You are listening to Africa Straight Talk. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you find your podcast. Africa Straight Talk, Africa's unapologetic podcast.
Let's move on to another crisis. There's another crisis in Sudan. I mean, this has been going on for a while now. Now, we are talking about North Sudan.
But yeah, that's Sudan what I was itself, going to say. We're not talking South about Sudan. South Sudan. The country split into two a while back. Now yes, there are two right. countries. Yeah. And so what's going on in the Sudan?
Sudan is also interesting. Sudan is interesting in that this is also an internal strife between them and different rebels. Not knowing the details itself, but knowing that there's displacement. Families displaced, refugees, just mass destruction of the country. Mass destruction of the country. And people not able to go back to their homes. People whose homes have been forever destroyed, they cannot even access it ever again or you know, in the near future. Now, my thing is this. We're the mainstream media. I mean, we hear every day you turn on the TV, you hear about Gaza.
Yeah.
How come we don't hear about Congo and we don't hear about all these other places? You know, they say if a tree falls, it was never happened. How come what's happening to us is not covered?
You know, I think,
it's not covered
I think
enough.
As Africans, we owe it to ourselves to cover some of these things.
I agree. But whether we have,
why do we need the Western media to cover our story?
I couldn't agree with you more. Really? I have a millionaire friend who moved back to Ghana, and I remember having a conversation with him about the possibility of starting like a news network for Africa, and they didn't see any value in it.
Well, you know why?
It's something like that. So,
yeah, you know why? Well, you know why it's difficult? Because those leaders were the news. They don't want a private.
Yes.
They don't want a private news organization that will be very strong because they will criticize them. So they make it difficult. So when a credible, I mean, let's say you are a journalist and you are very credible, and you know what I mean? You say it like it is. The only place that you can do that, you have to do that outside the continent. Because if you do that in the country where you know what I mean?
We'll
you criticize
you
it or they take you out. They will shut down your news organization.
That is the problem.
Yeah, I
get that. I understand that. But I just have this really idealistic view of if we keep pushing, we have to sacrifice. You know, if we sacrifice and stand up to the bullies, they will stand down because they safety in numbers. Right? But that's so idealistic. I understand. I know. I completely understand. But I'm just like, ugh, why can't we be strong enough to do something? Why?
We are not ready for democracy. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not ready for democracy.
I mean, the people are ready for democracy, but the leaders are not ready because they want to stay in power indefinitely.
Our orientation to leadership is still that of the, what do you call it?
Monarchy?
Monarchy, yes, and oligarchs, you know. That's our orientation to leadership. We're not into power sharing. We're not into resources sharing. We're not into the collective. You know, we used to be, but we're not. And that's the problem we have. Our orientation to power is more so about using office to amass wealth for yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's what kings were doing before us.
Yeah, and so I think we talked about this in our last episode, because even during before the colonialists came in, I mean, we had our own tribal leaders, we had our own, like, you know, but the tribal leader was given a lot of power and a lot of, you know, we gave them respect. We even used to feed them. We used to give them, you know, whatever it is that we had to give them because we respected and we honored our leaders. You understand? So that carried on. So, I mean, I think they came in and exploited the whole thing, right?
Well,
that's what I'm thinking here.
When the colonists came, right, they were taking everything. They, I mean, power was used to really enrich them, not us. And everything was taken out. So, for instance, we lived in the boys' quarters, what they call the boys' quarters, right? And we were the servants, and we served them and everything else. Now, when we get money, we get one of us to live in the boys' quarters, and then they serve us, right? We had a driver, and there's the owner's corner. And we sit in the owner's corner holding a newspaper, and we're being driven around. That used to be we driving the colonial masters around, you know? Yeah. And so we saw the dynamics of power as not being even shared, but being a hierarchy.
So the Sudan crisis, it looks like the United States is supporting one side. That's the problem. United States is supporting one side. I mean, I know there are two conflicting leadership there. They're fighting for power. And I think that's what caused the crisis, because if they have let the Sudanese people vote their own leader, this will not happen. But the thing is that the West, they always come in and take part, you know, because they want to place the people that they want. Exactly. That's what creates all those crises in Africa, really.
Yeah, they want a proper government. The thing about the West is they didn't wake up one morning and, went, oh, you know, colonization is bad or slavery is bad, let's end this, right? Colonization ended because England ran out of money after the Second World War. Most of them ran out of money. And then the colonies started fighting or agitating for freedom, took advantage of that whole thing after the war, right? And so you have India and many other countries getting their freedom. Then when the wave came to Africa, we started getting our freedom. And then, of course, if people in Angola hear that people in Ghana have gotten their freedom, they also want their freedom, right? So that freedom wave started, you know, blowing across the continent. So everything ended. But what the Europeans still wanted more than anything else was still free or cheap access to our resources. And so whatever government they can put in place to give them that, you know, this is what Nkrumah wrote about in his book, Neocolonialism, that they are going to orchestrate different avenues, different backdoor channel to us to be able to really still get their resources. And so then whatever government, puppet government they can put in place that will let them have like Mobutu, giving them everything they wanted, right? They didn't want to go the Patrice Lumumba route. So they get rid of Patrice Lumumba and put in Mobutu, and Mobutu hands everything to them in exchange for personal wealth, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the dynamic that we have, where the West is still managing our affairs and interfering in our affairs.
Yeah, and they're still interfering even some of our political organizations, just like the ECOWAS.
Yeah.
You know, the Economic Community of West Africa State, they just recently lifted the sanction that they imposed on the four West African countries.
The Sahelian.
And Guinea. These countries, they took over the leadership of their country to get rid of the puppet presidents in these countries.
Isn't it sad?
Yeah, very.
It's sad. Mm-hmm. And they put sanction on those people. So, you know, that a lot of the Africans are complaining, or I mean, some of the leaders, they complain that at the Berlin conference, there were no African. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're selling their own brothers and countries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You see, through that stupid ECOWAS.
This is all, look, I feel like as a requirement for any African leader, you need to read neocolonialism.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's happening with ECOWAS and all that stuff, we were warned about it. Nkrumah warned us. If you read Nkrumah's writing in that book, especially Neocolonialism, you would think he was alive today. Yeah. And he was here in 2024, seeing everything that's happening. And really the push for us to unite as one when we missed that opportunity, you know. But anytime I hear this, anytime I just go, what a mind. What a mind we had, and we let that slip. You know, we didn't listen to him.
But their action, that's ECOWAS action.
ECOWAS and all these, letting the Europeans come back is what he talked about. Neocolonialism, in the book, he actually even outlined all the people who have economic benefits in Africa, right? And the Oppenheimer family, and the this family, and the that family. He made the money connection. He applied everything. He arranged everything for us to know everything about the West and how they move and why it is that we should never give them the chance. That book is out of print. They don't publish it. It was banned. I got my copy from the library and I never took it back. I paid the fees.
Yeah.
But the French gives ECOWAS money.
Exactly.
We need them. Right now, we need Europe. ECOWAS needs Europe. We don't have the money to fund ECOWAS.
That is how twisted these African governments are. Because we have more mineral resources, more riches on the ground than the Europe. So why would we need money from them when we can sell them at the right price? Our resources, so that we can be able to support our different organizations.
Let's put it this way. We're not refining our resources into value-added goods.
Exactly.
So when we go to sell our resources, we're getting the cramps, the bare minimum on the resource. So we're always running a deficit, even for our individual nations, you know? And so the need for the unity was to get us all as one. Let's say Ivory Coast is selling cocoa, and Ghana has cocoa, and Togo has cocoa, and Kenya has cocoa. And then I'm England. I come to Ghana. I want to buy the cocoa for $15 a pound. And then you say, that's too cheap. It's $50 a pound. They'll go to the next country. The next country will be willing to sell it for $15. They undermine your cost. They bring the cost down because there's competition. Now, if you're one country and they can only get a cocoa from you, now you get to dictate the price. Now you get to even determine that they should bring their factories here to come and really produce the products here and then ship them out. Now you make more money when you're selling things that has value than buying things, right? So now we flipped the thing around where our economies are thriving. That was the case for the unity that was being pushed for, the reason why we needed to unite. And so when we didn't get to unite, now we're all these fragments and factions and all this other stuff that we don't even have the resources to manage our own affairs, let alone contribute money to ECOWAS or OAU. OAU and ECOWAS, they're all funded by the Western countries now. The very people who were established, it was established to protect ourselves from, those are the people who are funding those organizations. And so it's become sham organizations that is used to control us, to get us to do what the Western world wants to do, because they're the ones funding it.
For me, we know what the issue is, right? We know it's interference from the West. We know it's the divide and conquer. But what are we doing to get ourselves out of it? I think that is what we as Africa needs to focus on. what do we need to do to get out of this nonsense that we're, that seems that we just can't seem to get out of? It's like we are, I think we said this in our very, one of our very early, episodes. We are in an abusive relationship, right? Where, mm-hmm. which we can't get out of. You know, the West is the abuser. It's the batterer. Just keeps beating us down constantly. And we're always making excuses. No, it's okay. When times are good, they're really good. They give us money. They do. You know, those are the excuses we are making.
You know,
I think this is what we need to listen to the PLO, Lumumbas, and the like.
Yeah.
In pushing the agenda for unity. You know, because the only way to get out of everything is the African Union. Really? If we come together as one.
They are the puppet of the West.
If we come together as one, we change the game.
Do you think we in the diaspora can play a role in changing the outlook of Africa? Do you think if we
definitely.
Band together, if we are one here,
we can set up
manufacturing in Africa so that we can actually process some of the goods, the things that we produce? Because producing stuff doesn't produce money. It is the process that adds value to it. Mm-hmm.
Those of us in the diaspora, most of the people back on the continent do not care to hear what ideas we have. They just want our money and they want us to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Give your money to this and then shut up. Don't tell us, because they even think, some even think that because you're not living there, you're a traitor, you're not, you know, you don't love your country, you're not a patriot. Your patriotism is questioned to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other flip side, our remittance to the continent is a huge part of their budget.
Yes.
Our remittance. So if we are intentional and we use our remittance as leverage to pressure the government. But, you know, you have a government, people who don't even care.
That's the thing.
They don't even care. They don't even see the connection, because as long as you're not affecting them directly today, you know,
I'm in a WhatsApp group that at one point we're talking about, we as the diaspora are going to stop remitting money to Kenya. We as the diaspora demand XYZ. I don't know how far that went, because I was like, this is not effective. It really isn't. They don't care. You're still going to send money home.
Yeah,
you because are because you're not going to leave your
family. Is like, I want this.
Exactly.
I need
you're not
and
going
then
to leave your family.
You also may be
family.
Building a house or building this and building
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So it's, we have to know, where does it hurt the government the most to have the biggest effect? Money. Yes. If we stop remitting money, they might suffer, but you know what? We are also going to suffer. So where is it that we are going to suffer the least and the government suffer the most for us to have the biggest effect? And that means we have to be united to get the impact that we are looking for.
Which brings me to this thing here, where the U.S. government has been in talks with Nana Akufo-Addo, Ghana's president, to not sign. I don't know, you've heard about the draconian
anti-gay
bill.
Talking
about the economic impact and the corporations and companies that will be pulled out or stop doing business with Ghana as a result of that.
Yeah.
And you listen.
That is a white melon, man.
But the thing is,
it's a white melon, not black melon.
It's white melon.
Melon.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm left to think about South Africa. And that was how South Africa apartheid was brought to its knees. You know, companies just pulling out as a result of you not following their rules or whatever it is. And so the Ghana president has been hesitant to sign the bill. You have the Catholic priest in Ghana threatening him that you sign the bill or you forfeit your party's vote in the election coming in this December, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so you have the president torn between what U.S. government is pulling him to do. The bill actually was, you know, pushed by the opposition, not the current president's party.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. The opposition,
but it's widely supported by most people in Ghana because of their religious.
It is supported by most people. Yeah. Because of the culture. Yeah.
Because of the culture, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But it's draconian in that it even affects people who are straight. So, say, for instance, you're talking about supporting gay rights, you're advocating for it, right? That's a crime.
Oh, if you're supporting
it. If you're supporting it, that's a crime.
Yeah.
If you're an ally, it's a crime. Okay.
With the intent to commit a crime, if you intend to have sexual intercourse with the same sex, right? Or even if you cross dress. There are lots of comedians who cross dress.
Do
that for comedy.
So that will be a crime.
The issue of cross dressing, does that mean that women cannot wear men's clothing too? Because that's cross dressing. Mm-hmm. You know? Because they fall within legally, it's cross dressing if you wear pants.
Yes.
You know? So what's cross dressing? It's not clearly defined. And then you have issues of intent. So, sexual intercourse, culturally, we're a society where we don't do PDA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
public display of affection, right? Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All of that, those sexual activities happen in rooms. So, you would have to have been there.
Yep.
To see. Mm-hmm. And even that will be your word against the president's word, right? Mm-hmm. When you're accusing someone. And it could be easily, you could easily have somebody falsely accuse you.
Mm-hmm.
And then thrust you into this case where there's no way, who had the burden of proof?
Yeah. It's your word against theirs. Yeah.
Who is accused or the person accusing you? Yeah. And how do they prove that you're actually partaking in that thing?
Mm-hmm.
And the question, the law is all about intent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even prove intent?
So when is the Ghana Akufo-Addo Ghana president is supposed to be looking at this?
No, he's looking at it now. He's still mulling over it,
This is what I say. Two adults can do whatever the hell they want to do. What is your problem? Why are you going into their bedroom or into their homes? What are you going into their homes for?
It's really it's really what I think is going on. It's a distraction, deflection from, you know, politics and other stuff. And
whatever matters that
more
are
than anything else is the Christian whatever council or whatever that organization here in the U.S.
is pushing.
Because the guy who was leading the thing, he came to a conference in Utah for that organization. And, of course, they gave him all the things he needed to go there to go advance that bill and everything else. And
you know, that same organization pushed the same agenda in Uganda.
And they succeeded.
Yeah, all over in Africa, yeah.
Yeah, they succeeded. Yeah. And the Ghana one is even more draconian than the Ugandan one. The Ghana one, even just advocating for it or even dressing up, cross-dressing, is, you know.
Okay, so on the lighter note, Kaboshi, did you go see the Bob Marley's movie One Love?
I did. I actually did. And I want to hear what Kwesi has to say about it.
Kwesi, yeah, I know. What was your?
This can be part one. Next time we meet, we can continue.
So I feel like there were more to Bob Marley that was not brought to the screen.
Okay.
And if you are I call it the legend fan, the mm-hmm. you know, the legend collection that they had, One Love and Three yeah. Little Birds and stuff, you don't really know Bob Marley songs, then this movie is for you. You get to learn something about him.
Yes, that's but what there it were is. Critical
moments mm-hmm. of his life. They only focused on the making of the music, the song Exodus. You know, they could have talked more about Zimbabwe when they talked about Zimbabwe, because when he was in Zimbabwe, the rebels came to tell him that it was his music that inspired them to fight for okay. independence.
Mm. All right, Kwesi, hold it there. We're going to continue on that in our next episode, because it's a very interesting. There's a lot of things to talk about that they missed in this movie. So we can talk more about it in our next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Africa Straight Talk is presented by me, Emmanuel Nadeau, and Kaboshi Mbukwa, and with the collaboration of our colleague, fellow podcaster, Kwesi Wilson, of Telling Tall Stories. Thank you, Kwesi, for your contribution in this episode.
You're welcome.
Find more episodes on our website, www.africastraighttalk.com. You can also find us wherever you find your podcasts. We are on Twitter at Africans Talk, and you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Africa Straight Talk. And of course, don't forget to tell all your friends about us. To become a sponsor of our growing podcast, email us, africastraighttalk@gmail.com. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We invite you to check back here for our next one. In the meantime, be safe, be well, and love one another.